good to be here. I really like this group. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. And I am a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I, since January 17, 1981. And I'm grateful to that, grateful for a God of my understanding, who I have a relationship with now. And I'm just grateful. Hey, listen, I'm a satisfied customer. I'm just a satisfied customer. And I'm here to bring comfort to the afflicted and affliction to the comfortable and piss you off. Listen, hey, my goal in an AA meeting is I don't want you walking out of here saying, well, it was just another AA meeting. I want you walking out of here saying either somebody ought to report this guy because he's poisoning and killing newcomers and saying all sorts of outrageous things and being pissed at me. So pissed that you either drink, which is okay, you know, it may kill you, but, you know, alcohol is pretty common as dirt, you know, and come, or, you know, you try to figure out what that resentment's all about and talk to your sponsor and inventory it, and you'll figure out something about yourself. Because whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So if I disturb you, I mean I've done my job. I've helped you out. The last thing I want is you comfortable out that out there. The only time you're going to learn anything about yourself, I mean, it's like an X-ray. It's like an MRI. You come in here, you get an MRI. You're going to walk out of here. I want you thinking, I don't believe he said that. I can't believe this for a week, you know. I can't believe you said that last week, and then I thought and I wrote, and, you know, and then all works out. That's it. If you get pissed off enough times over the next 20, 30 years, you'll probably change, learn something about yourself. Or you'll drink and die or get miserable or something, and which is also possible in alcoholics. I asked my sponsor once, you know, what I really want you to have is freedom. I want you to be free. You know, I want you to have that new freedom. I don't want you to have that old crap. I want you to have that new freedom and the new happiness. You've never had it before because it's new. It's brand new. That's why they said it's new freedom, a new happiness. I'm not talking about the happiness that you think comes from a new car or a girlfriend or a boyfriend or any of that stuff, any of that crap that sort of withers on the vine or goes or comes, can rust. I'm talking about the happiness that stays with you no matter what, rich, poor, whatever the deal is. You know that Apostle Paul stuff where he said, I've learned to be content in all things. I've learned the secret to be content in all things. I want that deal. You know the thing they talk about? That's what I want to be here for. That's what I want to talk about. I want to stick around this group because they told me when I came here, now they told me I never had a drink again, and they were right about that, by the way. They told me I never had to feel the way I felt before, and they were right about that. And you know what else they told me? I read somewhere in the big book, they said I could experience much of heaven, be rocked into the fourth dimension of existence, of which I had not even dreamed, and they were right about that. You know, they told me all sorts of stuff. They said all sorts of remarkable things would happen to me. I'd lose fear of economic insecurity and fear of people. That, you know, I'd have a new freedom and new happiness. I mean, it's like unbelievable, the stuff they told me. They said if I saw to it that my relationship with him was right, great events would come to pass for me and countless others. They told me that God would show me how to create the fellowship I craved. You know, and I didn't even know I craved fellowship. I thought I craved booze and cars and everything like that, and I found out that I don't need any of that stuff. I don't need anything. I don't need a new car. I don't need a new house. I don't need a new wife. I don't need anything. I just need him and a fellowship of believers. And I'm perfectly satisfied where I am. I am a satisfied customer. I mean, this is great. Life is great. It's unbelievable. God is good. You know? And so listen, I got something new for you. You haven't heard this before. I know you've heard the name. I got something for you. Okay? This is a little poem. I'm in a poetic mood tonight. Now this is actually about the fifth step. I'm going to touch upon the fifth step, but don't hold me to it. You understand what I'm saying? So if you're going to get a resentment about the fact that now the truth is, now I'm going to tell you the truth now, but it may take you years to figure it out. Everything I say tonight is going to be about the fifth step. You just may not understand that, but that ain't my fault. I can't help what you understand. I'm only responsible for what I say. I'm not responsible for the fact that you don't understand it. The fact that 20 years from now you'll be thinking and saying the same thing, it'll be about the fifth step and not even remember this meeting, is not my fault. You know, I'm just going to say what I'm going to say, but it's all about the fifth step. It's all about all the steps. You know, every meeting, everything I do, my entire life, if you dissect it and take it apart, there's a part of the steps in all of them. You know, I used to divide them up. Oh, that's a fifth step. That's a tenth step. Oh, there's each third step, and he's turning it. Yeah, that's a this, you know, they're all there. You're living your life every 5 minutes, you know, any 5 minute intervals, you're doing every step in the world without even knowing it. There's a part of the principles of the step and, you know, every movement and every life. in every expanse of time, you know, and it's hard to go through an hour meeting without touching upon the fifth step, because the fifth step, hey, if you're looking at me right now, you're listening to me, you're watching the fifth step in action. Wouldn't you rather see it in action? Wouldn't you rather see the fifth step in action? Wouldn't you rather see transparency in action? Wouldn't you want to rather see the results of the fifth step in action? Wouldn't you rather see people that can talk to you straight and give it to you straight, you know, and they don't have to look at their notes or try to figure out what they're going to say or worry about, you know, why did I say that or what are they going to think or stuff like that, because they don't have to worry about that because they're free to talk their mind and talk about what God's done for them. Like Bill Wilson said, the Lord's been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep on talking about it and telling other people. He wasn't scared. You know, rather than walking around the planet Earth worrying about what some banana thinks about you, spending all sorts of money on your credit card, buying stuff that you don't even need so you can impress people you don't even like because you're scared they may not let you into their club. You know, that kind of deal. An entire life built to fail, making decisions basically because you feel crappy about yourself, because you got to have stuff or be stuff or look a certain way, lying to people and being a name dropper and making yourself bigger than you are and all sorts of stuff and comparing your insides with other people's outsides and living that crummy life and not even knowing that it's a crummy life or you feel that way, not even understanding that, just worrying about all the time, what does he think and what are they doing and what am I going to say and what's going to happen to me and why did I say this and all that sort of prognosticating and sort of projecting into the future and that kind of crappy deal. And a mind that has a million thoughts going on at the same time, you know, it's all about you and crappy thoughts about you and other people. Instead of a quiet mind. I mean, you don't want that stuff. That's all. You just want to stop drinking. Is that it? But stick with that other bullshit? I don't think so. You know, that's not what I wanted. So here we go. This is a little something. I felt I was in a poetic mood, so I'm going to read you something. I don't think you've heard this one before. There's a man in the world who is never turned down wherever he chances to stray. He gets the glad hand in the populous town or out where the farmers make hay. He's greeted with pleasure on deserts of sand and deep in the aisles of the woods. Wherever he goes, there's a welcoming hand. He's the man who delivers the goods. The failures of life sit around and complain. The gods haven't treated them right. They've lost their umbrellas whenever it rains, and they haven't their lanterns at night. Men tire of failures who fill with their sighs the air of their own neighborhoods. But there's one who is greeted with love-lighted eyes. He's the man who delivers the goods. One fellow is lazy and watches the clock and waits for the whistle to blow. And one has a hammer with which he will knock, and one tells a story of woe. And one, if requested to travel a mile, will measure the perches and roods. But one does his stunt with a whistle or smile. He's the man who delivers the goods. One man is afraid that he'll labor too hard. The world isn't yearning for such. And one man is always alert, on guard, lest he put in a minute too much. And one has a grouch or a temper that's bad. And one is a creature of moods. So it's hay for the joyous and rollicking lad, for the one who delivers the goods. You know, you don't want to be a thumb-sucking crybaby in this deal. This is like the no wine zone. You know, just wine silently. I didn't come in here to whine. You know, I know you say love and tolerance is our code, right? Yeah, not where I come from, not in my deal. That's just not my deal. Just go to another sponsor. Get somebody else who's going to tolerate that crap. People, go to your mother or your wife or your husband or whoever it is in your life who has been living with your crap for 10 or 20 years and allowing you to get away with it. Go to that guy while you've been nailing your nails to your own personal coffin. That's who you have to go to get that deal. I'm here. Listen, I don't know about you, but I want that deal. You know what I like about this thing? And I don't know how many people, I know there's some people in here are going to understand what I'm saying. I love to read this book. I love to read the Bible. I love to read a lot of stuff. But I like this book. And because, you know, here's the deal. When I read this book, for instance, let's take this part right here. I don't read the parts anymore. Once in a blue moon I do, right? I don't read the parts about the problem. I don't even see the parts about the problem. I just like reading about the rocket ship ride. I just like reading the parts where it says, these last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of these years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient, chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Hey, the biggest thing I did today was pick up my 7-year-old granddaughter from school. That was great. That was great. I got 6 of them little girls, 6 grandkids, 4 granddaughters. They're unbelievable, all gorgeous. Where derision, by the way, I have pictures. You know, I'm going to keep on reading this, but I've got to tell you something. I've thought, if I can do it, if I figure a way to do it, they'll probably bar me from AA in this one. But what I really want to do is get some sort of projector. And somewhere during my talk, I'm dying to flip it on so I can show you pictures of my grandkids. I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry. I think it has something to do with AA. I don't know. I haven't figured it out. I'm going to work it into a step meeting. I'm working it in. I'm going to show my grandkids, my kids. I'm going to show the whole deal. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great. But I have a fortune in friendships, in courage, in self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man. The greatest thing accorded to any man. The love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. And you know, I'll tell you what I really adore about stuff like that in the book, and it's all over the book. You know, it's all over the book if you look for it. And I'll tell you where you really sense it and when you really see it and you really get a kick out of it. Like, for instance, this one. It says this. Perhaps there is a better way. They're talking about reviewing our fears. So I'm going to talk a little about fear tonight. They say, perhaps there is a better way. We think there is. We think so, for we are now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him. Does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? To match calamity with serenity. No matter what's going on, you're serene. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness, paradoxically is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. You know, I read that stuff. I read the stuff I just read to you. I read the stuff, you know, where it talks about in the starting of the of chapter 6, where it talks about what we're trying to get a close connection with God. That's the whole reason for this thing in chapter 6, where they read that part, and I say, that's what I'm involved in now. I don't read it like maybe one day it'll happen, or maybe one day I'll feel that way. I say, hey, preach it, brother. Amen. That's how I feel. These guys are talking, you know, I used to read this book and they talk about the jaywalker and the drinking and the screwing up and the feeling crappy and the resentments. And I said, that's me. And I was so excited because there was a book about a whack job, a crazy man, a total loser, a nut, a guy who was bipolar, crazy, nuts, depressed. And I'd say, I thought I was unique. Finally, it's a book about me. And now I read this book and they talk about, we'll know much of heaven. We'll be rocketed in the fourth dimension, which we've not even dreamed. Fear will leave us. Fear of economic insecurity, fear of people. We'll know a new happiness, a new freedom. And I say, wow, they wrote a book about me. They got this book about me. It's unbelievable. The whole book, you wouldn't believe in there. You know, they have a little stuff in there. They have this thing called More About Alcoholism, and there is a solution and all that stuff. You know, when you first come in, you read that, and hey, that makes you feel really good. But I'm going to tell you something. Most of the book is devoted to the incredible stuff that's going to happen to you. You want to hang, you don't want to hang around here for 14, 15, 25 years. Some old guy in the corner sucking his thumbs in. Just put the plug in the jug, you know. Don't want to do that crap. You want the new freedom and the new happiness. You want that thing. You want to be dominated by all those great feelings. All the great stuff. You want to do the wise stuff. Be wise. You want to get rid of the grouch and the brainstorm and all that stuff. So, when I was 10 years old, I was there's many ways to talk about the steps. And they say our experience shows in a general way what we used to be like. I think our stories and our experience are extremely important. Somehow, some way, and I don't know whether I'll ever be able to explain this in 5 minutes or 5 years or 20 years or whatever it is, but if there's anything I want to bring across in name meaning, is that which I think the book brings across. Somehow, some way, God and your relationship with God has to do with this deal. You know, now it says job or no job, wife or no wife. You know, when you say he wants the wife, and it says burn it into the consciousness, all he needs, it all depends upon his relationship with God. Somehow through that relationship and the power that flows in through that relationship, it changes us. We don't change us. It changes us. That's why they have chapters to the agnostics. They say, you know, if you know, we say things like, oh, do the next right thing. I can't. I'm sorry. I can't. If I do the next right thing, it's blind luck. Or maybe I'm like disciplining myself or I'm trying. You know what I mean? It's like a prison. Somehow, some way, I'm blowing up someday. It ain't going to look good. The change I have that AA talk, that's why they have, otherwise we wouldn't have chapter the agnostic. They say if a mere code of morals or better philosophy of life would have solved the problem, you know, we'd be better, we wouldn't even need these meetings. He says, but our problem is lack of power. That's our dilemma. We've had to find a power. That means we wrote a book, we got to talk about God. God's the power. Even in the promises at the end, we say he is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. He's not saying he's helping us do what we can do. He's saying he's doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. In the book, he says there is one who has all power. That is God. May you find him now. It doesn't say you have like 5% of the power. I'm powerless. And that's an impossible thing to sell somebody when they still have a job and they're driving a car from here to there. It's hard to feel powerless if you feel you have power because you can yell and scream and push people around and buy and sell. It's a lot easier when you're broke and you're just coming out of jail and you have no money and you got nothing, you know what I mean? Then all of a sudden somebody says you're powerless, you start believing it until you get your job back again. And you know how we are, you know, first day we're unemployable, 3 months later we're underpaid, you know, that pride and that ego comes back. How do you continue to stay powerless after 20 years, after 30 years, and have that, whatever that is, may I say humility? I don't even know what I got. That thing that is to let you know that no matter how good it is, no matter how fantastic it is, even in the worst of time, no matter what gifts you have, that it's all about him and it's nothing about you. And allow people to know that you're not taking any credit for that and mean it. How do you keep that deal going? And it's something about having a relationship with him. You know, when you have a relationship with him, it says, see to it your relationship with him is right. When you have a relationship with that deal, the deal they're talking about in that book, and you know who he is and what he is and what the deal is and what he means, and you know yourself, you see yourself for the first time, and you know who you really are, and you stop bullshitting yourself, and you know what's really going on, you see that mirror clearly. You know, one of the essential books, and there were three books that were essential in the first 4 years of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was Sermon on the Mount. There was 1 Corinthians 13, and then there was the book of James. And in the, I just happen to have 1 Corinthians 13 right here. It's in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. So before you report me to New York, which you may, just tell them to take Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers off the market. It's AA approved. That's where this comes from. It says right here. This is what these guys were reading all the time that started this thing. It says, I'm just going to read part of it. This is the love chapter. It says, love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. You know, the brains. For we know in part, and we prophesize in part, but when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. Here we go. When I was a child, which was by the time, all the way up to and including and a little bit past when I came in here. When I was a child. I've met him as they come in here. I sponsor him. I've been sober a little over 30 years. I'm not, but hey, my sponsor's got 57. It's a short time compared to him. But you want to know something? Sponsored a lot of guys. Trust me. Seen him come in here. They come in as children. I came in as a child. An emotional child, for sure. If not chronologically. That's what Bill Wilson said. The next frontier is emotional sobriety. He said our real problem is unhealthy dependencies. When I was a child, I talked like a child. Who do they think they're dealing with? They can't do that to me. Why is this always happening to me? Whining, crying, thumb-sucking crybaby. I acted like a child. I lashed out like a child. I sucked my thumb like a child. I felt sorry for myself like a child. You want to see who I was when I came in here? You go find a 2-year-old child in terrible twos and take his toy away. And then you got me. Whining and crying. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish things behind me. Man, it's tough. Some of these guys, it's tough to get that rattle out of their mouth. It's tough to get them away from the football game. You know, they want to suck on that rattle, you know, from the sports. You don't want to suck on that rattle. Tough to get them away from the non-serious stuff and get them to look at serious crap. They'll spend more time looking at a ball game that they have absolutely no money in, nothing to do with, won't affect their life at all, just getting crazy, then going to church, reading the Bible, reading this stuff, or trusting in thing and looking at, and I'm talking about 40, 50, and 60-year-old men. And they wonder why their lives are a shamble and they can't have a decent relationship with anybody. Because they're more worried about what's going on with the quarterback, who, believe me, isn't thinking about them. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Now we see but a poor reflection in the mirror, then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. What a blessing to know yourself. I'm not even saying I know myself. Not even close, a little bit better than it was 30 years ago. What a blessing to know yourself when you walk in here and you've crapped over everybody and you've hurt everybody and you've ripped your life apart and you blame everybody else and you think it's everybody else's fault and all you want to talk about is what they did to you and you're the primary blame for everything, but he usually doesn't think so. Because your alcoholic life seems the only normal one, and until you realize that you're crazy, even though you know you're brilliant. How does that work? I'm the smartest guy in the world. Nobody knows me better than anybody else. I'm brilliant. You don't understand. You don't get it. I'm different. I'm unique. How do you have that feeling welling up inside of you, part of your DNA, and somehow, some way, it's got to be a God thing, also have the paradoxical feeling, you're crazy. Don't listen to yourself. This book is right. This book says you're crazy. Go with the book. Go with your sponsor. I know you know that you've got 3 weeks, and Sally will cure you. You just know that this is the right relationship. You met her in detox, you got something in common. You're both crazy alcoholics, and this thing's really going to work. You know what I mean? And your sponsor's saying you're crazy. Go with your sponsor. You know? Where does that come from? Some guys don't go. They will never do that. They'll always go with their feelings, their emotions, their thinking. How does it go when you consciously put your thinking to the side and say, I ain't listening to that brain. I'm going to listen to that guy. I'm going to read this book. This book tells me what the answer is. I don't believe in God, but you want to know something? I don't see how it can happen. I don't see how it can fix it, but I'm going to go with this book anyway. How does that happen? But I want to know you want the new freedom and the new happiness. You want that deal? You somehow, some way, have to turn yourself over to this way of thinking. You got to turn something, you know, like it says in the chapter of the agnostic, when first thought, this sort of, when, you know, the agnostic thinking, this sort of thinking must be abandoned. This book talks, hey, listen, this book is built for alcoholics. You know what that means? It means it lies to you. That's the only way to deal with alcoholics. You got to lie to them. It says things like, don't worry about God, and then it talks about God throughout the entire book. I'm telling you. You know what I mean? You got to read what... I know there's some guy in the back saying, I knew it, I knew it. I know your sponsor's saying it's not about God. Oh, don't worry about God. Oh, it's got to be, it's a grapefruit. It's all that's a, no, no. It's all about God. It was taken from the Bible. No, no. I'm lying. I'm wrong about this. I'm probably wrong. You knew. Don't get sober, you know. It'll really piss you off, you know, when you find out what's really going on here. You know? So, and somehow, there's a connection there. There's a connection. Very rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So I was 10 years old, and I'm down there in the football field, or the baseball field, in Saddle Rock, New York, with about 18, 20 other guys, you know, 10-year-old guys. And back then, they didn't care how smart you were, or anything like that. It was how good you could catch a ball, what kind of athlete you were. I've always been a bad athlete. And they have the two captains, you know what I mean? And they're picking, you know, the squads. So one guy says, so I'm in the middle of these 20 guys. And one guy says, well, I'll take Fred. And, you know, Fred goes over to this captain. Anybody ever been involved in this deal? So Fred goes over to the right, you know. Other guy says, well, I'll take George. George goes over to the left, you know. You know, I'll take Steve. And Steve goes over to this. Well, I'll take Neil. And Neil goes over here. And the crowd is getting smaller and smaller. And I'm in the middle of the crowd, and I'm praying. I don't even necessarily believe in God or anything, but I'm praying. I don't know why do people do that who don't believe in God. They say deep down inside of every man, woman, and child, when the chips are down, when the plane's going down, you know, I mean, screw everybody else. I don't care what they think. I'm praying, you know what I mean? Just in case. So, I mean, it's getting, and I'm praying. And this is what I'm praying. I swear, this is what I'm praying. Please don't let me be last. I mean, that's the low opinion I had of myself. You know what I mean? I didn't even pray to be first or to be second. My prayer was, don't let me be the one they hate the most. You know? And, of course, it gets whittled down until I'm the one last. Of course, in my mind, of course, I'm an alcoholic. You can't trust me. There were probably times when I was like second. I can promise you this. If I was second to last, it was a victory. Woo! Whoa! Victory! You know that was the happiest day of my life. You know, and now in second to last place, right? Woo! All right, okay. So the bottom line, and it seems to me though that I was always picked last. And you know, when people pick you last, I don't know whether you guys have been involved in this. They didn't even, especially 10-year-olds, they didn't even have the decency to make you feel good. It's like they're all there, sort of looking at you in the middle, and they're laughing. And the guy who picks you goes like this. He says, oh, do we have to have him? Now, I don't know how many of you guys have done inventory, okay? But I dare say any alcoholic on the planet who does an inventory, somewhere on that inventory when he talks about fear, it's going to be fear of humiliation, especially in front of crowds. That's why when people say, do the meeting or something, they say, well, I'm not ready. That's code for I'm scared shitless. You know what I mean? You know, what are they going to think about me? What am I going to do? Because we're scared that people are going to see who and what we are, and we're going to fall short. And every alcoholic is like that, no matter how much of a monster he portrays himself to be. He's got that fear, that corrosive fear inside of him. And you know how I know that? You know how I know that? It's not that I believe it. I know that because that's what the book says. You know, this book where it says we have corrosive fear running through us, it didn't say, Russell, this is just for you, not the rest of the alkies, you know? It's a book for all alcoholics. It says, we agree with this. He says, you're filled with, you know when you say to me, I'm not scared of anybody, you know what that tells me? It tells me you're in denial. That's the greatest thing about this book. It tells me all about you. I can diagnose you. You say, what's my problem? I said, you're in denial. You got your head up your ass. He says, what do you mean? I said, because you're in fear. No, I'm not. See, there you go. You're asking me to either believe a book that has helped millions of people break free of the bondage of alcoholism and feeling crappy about itself, or believe you, who's never done anything decent in his life or broke free of anything in his life, who's this thumb-sucking crybaby going through a sixth divorce, you know, and has 15 children from people that he hasn't even been married to. And you're asking me to believe with you and go with you versus go with this book. I ain't going with you. You know, and you're saying I should go with you because you feel strongly about it. Whoa. Your feelings mean nothing to me. They're the ones that screwed you up. Get rid of those. Ditch those things. Slap that inner child. Get rid of them, you know? I don't want to hear about it. So I'm sitting there in the middle of this crowd of guys, and God forbid it would be women. I'm sitting there in the middle of this crowd of guys, and they're making fun of me, and a weird thing sort of happened to me. You know, I didn't realize this. You know, you start realizing as you're going through these steps, as you're living life, as you're looking back, as you're looking at yourself and things like that, you sort of these things sort of come to you. And things that didn't seem important at the time from your past or even going through it maybe 20 years ago all of a sudden take on a new importance because you can see it in a different kind of light where it fits into the steps and the fear and who you are and what you are. And so I'm sitting there. And they're laughing at me. They're laughing at me. Not with me. They're laughing at me. And my reaction, and of course I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. Shame is a big deal. I was scared and ashamed and embarrassed and just that feeling that if you could either kill them or kill yourself or explode a bomb and wipe out, you know, you didn't want to be there, but there was no place to hide. And my reaction was this. It was an interesting reaction. I acted like it didn't bother me. Somehow I thought that if I wanted to cry, I wanted to run away, I wanted to be ashamed, you know, run away and hide, because my feelings were hurt. But I somehow felt, and I don't know where this came from, was a natural thing, a protective mechanism, that if I let you know how I felt, it would hurt even more. I'd be more vulnerable. So I closed the shell. You know, I put the wall up, and I acted like I was, like, laughing at me, like they were laughing at me. Like I was sitting, like I was there. You know, they talk about these out-of-body experiences. Like I was there in the middle, but I was really one of the guys off to the side. And I was laughing. I was saying, you know, yeah, like it didn't bother me. And then it would go away, and they'd start thinking about me. And how was I to know that when I built that wall up and I acted completely differently than what I felt so that I would not let them see how badly they would hurt me. And I put that wall of denial in front of me so they could never see that what was going on really inside of me. When I built that wall, how was I to know that that's the way I was going to react to anything and everything that I was scared of as far as other people? And that 15, 16, 18, 20 years later, that wall was going to be 10 feet thick. And nobody would ever know who I was and would separate me from you and make me feel like a moral lever. And even worse, that I had forgotten and didn't even know who I was or why I did the things I did or why I chose made the decisions I made or why I felt the way I felt. And most of the time, I didn't even know the feelings I was having. I'd be scared. I wouldn't even know it was scared because I didn't know what scared felt like. I couldn't put it together because my feelings were so mixed up, because whenever I'd have a feeling like that, instead of saying it was fear, it would come out something else. You know how many people, you know, half the time with new people in AA, they come in and they talk to me. They say, can I talk to you about something? He says, what? He says, well, I'm really worried about my job. I said, oh, you're scared. He says, no, I'm not scared. The first 5 years in AA, you're learning what you're really saying. I said, you don't understand. You just confessed to me that you're scared. No, I said I was worried. I said, worry is fear. Oh, you know, half the time, people don't realize what they're even saying or what they're thinking or what's going on. They don't even put a label on it. You know why? Because they're scared. Because then they'll be vulnerable. And so I'm sitting here, and I'm like completely... I'm hiding from the world. And you know, there's another thing that comes from that, and that's extreme loneliness. And of course, since you're so separated from everybody else, and you want some, you're hanging around people that are just like you in bars, and you know something, they got their deal going up too. Bunch of guys like bumper cars bumping into each other. Nobody knows anything about anybody else. And everybody's scared of everybody, and we don't even know we're scared. And there's only one thing to do if you want to connect and you got something like that. I need a drink. Because that's what happened. You know, I'd walk into a bar, you know, I'd see that group of people, and I'd be scared, will they like me? Will they laugh at my jokes? Will the girls like me? will I be able to, you know, hook up or something like that? I'm scared. Now, trust me, if you went up to me and said, you're scared of this group, I'd say, no, I'm not scared of anybody. And believe it. I tell you that. But I, you know, I'd have that feeling of trepidation or worry or stuff like that. Is the group going to like me? And I whacked down a couple of scotches and I felt like I owned the group. You want to dance, honey? No, forget it. You're a loss. You're a loss, sweetheart. You're a loss. And you're telling me this stuff is the problem? This has been the only solution for me my entire life. You know, so once you get rid of the booze and you're stuck with that wall and not knowing what's going on and just trying to muddle through life, not being able to see yourself in the mirror, trying to make decisions based upon what you think, and you don't even know what you think, and you don't even know what the real deal is. You can't even, and you want to know something? We were talking about this in the car coming over. There's a spiritual fruit of having a relationship with God. One of the fruits is what's called discernment. Being able, one of the things that you learn, you may not believe this, but it's one of the truths of my life, is when you start learning the truth about yourself and seeing who you are and what you are and understanding your own motivations and understand what's really going on. Because I'll tell you something, one of the great things about understanding that you're scared is you don't have to lash out and you don't have to scream, you don't have to yell, you don't have to hide, you don't have to cry. You can say, oh, I'm just scared. And you can say to somebody, I was scared, and it's not a big deal. Oh, it's not a big deal. And you can hang around people that are also spiritually fit that way. And you can talk about it, and you can share about it, and you can be, you ready for this? You. And I'm going to tell you something. I never realized this, but I'm actually a great me. I'm a terrible you. I'm a terrible somebody else. I used to be somebody else. I used to be anything you wanted me to be. If you wanted a racist, I'd be a racist. If you wanted me to be a believer in God, I'd be a believer in God. If you wanted to be an atheist, I'd be an atheist. I was whatever you wanted me to be in order to fit in with you. You know, just tell me, please, just love me. Just accept me. Why do you think when people come out of treatment, the first thing they say when they get as a sponsor is they say this. Now, they've just been told they're going to die if they drink. They know they're going to die if they drink. The one thing they can't do is drink. What's the one thing they say? They say, what do I say if somebody says, have a drink? Now, you think what they would do is naturally is they just take a gun and shoot the son of a bitch. You know what I mean? There's no talking. What, are you trying to kill me? No, no. They want to know, what do I say? And what they're really trying to say is this. Look, I want people to love me. I want people to love me and not laugh at me. Because I feel so crappy about myself. And I'm such a nothing inside. And I feel so little about myself and who I am and what I am. I know I don't even deserve to live. Other people so much better than me. So here's the problem. I won't be able to stand it if they don't like me and if I don't fit in. So what I'd like you to do is give me a cover story that I can tell somebody who asked me to have a drink at a party, so I can tell them and they won't feel badly about me. And they'll actually maybe like me. Because if you can't give me that cover story, then I'm going to have to drink, because I would rather die and have my whole family die and ruin my life than have this banana not like me for 5 seconds. Now, here's what happens. When you start understanding stuff like that, then it gets embarrassing, that goofy. You know, you just don't. But what happens is when you start seeing yourself and understanding yourself, you stop acting out because you understand what your motivations are and what you're doing and everything like that. But what really gets great is you start seeing and understanding other people. You will become discerning of other people. You can shake somebody's hand. They can say 3 words to them. You know all about them. You know more about them than they know about themselves. They'll start asking you questions. You'll tell them what the answer is. They won't, but they'll say, no, you don't understand. I said, well, of course, I never understand. All my sponsees say I don't understand. And that's all about becoming transparent. And that's all part of it. And becoming transparent, because God, you know something? God does not want a relationship with phonies. You know, no, the guys and gals you drank with in the bar, they're phonies, and I was a phony, and phonies like to hang out with phonies. And so if you're going to come in here, you got to understand there's going to be a desire on your part to hang out with phonies. You understand? And I want you to understand something. If you're an alcoholic, if you run into somebody who's not phony, you're not going to like them. Trust me on this. when you hang around phonies and people that allow you to bullshit about yourself all your life and don't call you on your horse shit and go along with your crap, trust me, you will not like a non-phony. You'll be looking for a phony. And God forbid you get a sponsor who is a phony or scared to tell you what's really going on, you'll ditch that son of a bitch as fast as possible. You know, unless there are some people that even though they get hurt, they'll say, I want to hang with that person. Because somehow, some way, even though somehow they say things to me that I don't like, I know they're telling me the truth. And God knows what I need is I need the message of weight and depth. I need somebody telling me the truth. And I need to tell somebody else the truth. I need to get it off my shoulders. I need to confess and tell somebody else the truth. And they need to tell me the truth. And I need to live in truth and be honest. I can't bullshit around anymore. Look, on my best day, doing this stuff as hard as possible, going to meetings and hanging out with people and other believers that talk about this truth, I'm still got a tendency to lie and to cover up things and minimize things and everything. I know that about myself. So I can't afford to play around with this thing. I got to know, go where they're speaking truth, and where they're speaking truth, I know they're going to give me hard doctrine. I know I'm going to hear some tough crap. That's why alkies don't want to go to church. They don't want to, you know, they forget everything. Oh, they're hypocrites and this, that, and the other. They don't want to go anywhere where it's going to be real, non-bullshit. They just get me to a place where everything looks shiny and nice and makes me feel good. I want to go to feel-good meetings. Where I can screw up in my life and do whatever I want and act the way I've always acted and be a child and go to a meeting, feel good for a half an hour, and people pat me on the back, and then I can leave and think I'm doing AA. And I guess I am doing AA. That's sort of like AA today, but it ain't sobriety the way I see it. It ain't old-timer sobriety, I can tell you that. It ain't the real deal. It's not what I'm looking for. It's not what these guys are looking for. It ain't the serious stuff. And so part of this deal, and God runs all through this thing. As a matter of fact, understand that in chapter 6, where it's into action, where we first get into the fifth step. That's right, not into thinking. It says the following. All along the book, and at the very end of the book, all it's talking about relationship with God, relationship with God, relationship with God. You know, as a matter of fact, in the first part of the book, in page 29 in the book, it says, page 29... I'm jumping all over this thing. But further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 43 personal experiences, like the personal experience I read when he sold himself short in that. You know, when the guy talked about the greatest thing that ever happened to me. It says, each individual, here's the personal stories. Remember it says our personal story. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way, what, the way he drank? Well, we may talk about that once in a while to sort of like give you identification. We may talk about a lot of things, but it says the way he established his relationship with God. That's what this book is all about. That's what all the AA, you hear an AA story, a drunk log, and they don't tell you how they talk about how they establish their relationship with God. They're not talking about what this book is talking about. It's just another, you want to know something? I used to listen to those stories in bars over beer. I beat up my wife, I did this, I got arrested and everything. I don't need to come to AA and listen to the same stories over coffee. Or listen to guys that are telling me the same stories or acting the same way over coffee. You know, I don't know whether you know this, but the only problem with Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not sure whether you're aware of this. Listen, you ready for this? It's filled with alcoholics. Okay. Let me try to explain this to you. All the guys and gals I drank with, all the alcoholics I drank with out there, where we sat around and bullshitted ourselves and talked about them and it's all the bullshit and our bright ideas, they're now all in here. They're all here. That's where we get, that's the waiting room, okay? They all come here. So when they hang out, they wait to go to see the doctor. Now they come here. Now what you got to understand is, some of these rooms turn into AA bars, where nobody's getting better, but they're sitting around and bullshitting themselves. Just like they did in the bar, but they're drinking coffee and picking up medallions. I'm sorry, I don't know. What we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all. It means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. This is all about, when you get to that part in the book, where it says you're going to know new freedom and a new happiness. What freedom do you think they're talking about? They're talking about freedom from fear. I love the line that Jesus said before he left the planet. He said, in this world you will have problems, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. What does that mean, to overcome the world? You know that little poem I read you? That was all about the fifth step. That was all about the whiners and the criers and the thumb-thucking crybabies and all the excuse makers and the blamers and the this happened to me and that happened to me and the other thing happened to me and the one guy. The one guy. He never whines. He never cries. It's not because he doesn't have cancer. It's not because he isn't broke. It doesn't because he never whines. He's the guy who delivers the goods. He's the guy who shows up. He delivers the goods. He shows up on time with a good attitude. There's no whining. There's no crying. Because you want to know something, he's got problems. But you know something? He's in this world and he's got problems. But you know something? He's overcome the world. The problems aren't touching him. They're not touching him. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? This is chapter 6. We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. That's what the fourth and fifth step is all about. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now they're about to be cast out. So there are obstacles to Him. You know, the Spirit, the sunlight of the Spirit, because as that Spirit comes into us, and it tells us in chapter, and how it works, what does it say happens? It says this. It says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Here's what's going to happen to you. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. Less and less interested in ourselves. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Imagine a life where you don't think about yourself. Can you imagine? I wonder if you can imagine that life. Do you know what that feels like? Man, I pray that you guys one day wake up one day and don't think about yourself. You're not going to believe it. You're just not going to believe it. I know it. I know what it is to live 20, 30, 40 years thinking all about yourself all the time. And I know what it is not to think about yourself. I know the difference. And it's amazing. It's amazing. I don't know how to explain it to you. I can't explain it to you. It's like trying to describe the color red to a blind man. It's seeing what could you, as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter, we were reborn. It's all about, and I don't have to tell you, you can read the book, and you can talk to your sponsor, and it tells you how to do the fourth step, and how to pick out somebody to talk to. But you know, the bottom line is, part of doing that and becoming transparent is ripping down that wall, and that's where we start losing fear of economic insecurity and fear of other people. You want to get to that place where you're losing fear, and it's possible in here. It's absolutely, all that stuff is absolutely possible. You know, when you go home tonight or tomorrow or next week or wherever it is, and you're in the car and you're thinking bad thoughts about yourself and bad thoughts about other people because of something you said or something you did or something happened to you and everything like that, you just remember that there's another way of life that is available to you where you never have to think that way or feel that way about yourself again. And you don't have to go through life like that. And when you hit that deal, it's a whole different ballgame. So thank you very much. Okay.